listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is The Shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. And with us today are Kristen Palpini, editor of The Valley Advocate, and Matt Safransky of Western Mass Politics and Insight. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having me.
This week it was revealed the New York group that financed last year's failed ballot question to expand charter schools in Massachusetts has agreed to a $400,000 fine by the State Office of Campaign Finance. That's the largest such penalty ever in Massachusetts. Regulators say the group served as a pass-through for donors, including two Baker administration officials, to contribute money without disclosing their names or the size of their contributions. And Governor Baker, who supported the measure, says he's glad things are settled.
They didn't comply with state law, and the donors' names have been released. And I heard about it a day or two ago.
Now, there's also some news from the Globe that one donor gave $2 million to the group, and the Baker administration later sided with the donor in a development dispute. So, Matt, is this going to come back to haunt Baker, or is he far enough away from it?
Well, you know, I think it's going to really depend on whether or not voters start to connect the dots, because this isn't the first time we've started to see a lot of, you know, the political industrial complex that kind of sits on top of Baker's administration. And to be fair, Democrats do it as well, but he ran as a business guy who said, I'm going to be, you know, not that person. I'm not going to do all the cronyism and deal-making of that kind. And now it's starting to happen all over the place. And you've seen, you know, you saw last year the way that things were running wild in energy and environmental affairs that affected a state Senate race around here. So, you know, if voters start to realize that this is a pattern and it's not just isolated incidents, I think they're going to start to have questions for the governor.
Kristen, does being associated with this group give a bad appearance for Governor Charlie Baker?
I think it does. I think it's one of those things that people might forget about, though, because it's a little it's a little too hard to picture. But I do want to say that this is the problem with charter schools, that they don't have the accountability and the oversight, and that's what makes them so dangerous. Stuff like this can happen and you don't find out.
And speaking of schools, we'll go to higher education next. The latest U.S. News and World Report college rankings are out, and local institutions held mostly steady. For instance, UMass dropped a spot from last year from 74th to 75th in the national university rankings. And looking at what they're calling the national liberal arts colleges, Williams and Amherst again finished 1-2 in the rankings. Kristen, there's some schools out there that make a big deal out of these numbers and others that really don't tout them at all. Do these rankings matter? Should they matter?
I think they do matter to some people. U.S. News and World has been around doing this for a really long time. Their metrics are, they sound okay, but really, I think they miss the big picture when it comes to colleges. They don't provide you with the kind of data that you'd really want. They don't consider the diversity, and they don't consider the amount of financial aid, I don't think.
Matt, there's no denying these schools are important to Western Massachusetts in an economic sense, in terms of jobs and tourism dollars and the like. Can a report like this do anything to help or hinder places like this that this area in particular count on?
You know, I don't know that it's really going to make a huge difference because, you know, some of these names, you know, like Williams, Hampshire, UMass, they have such, and not to say nothing of Smith and Mount Holyoke, they have such a storied reputation in, you know, almost in a national context. And certainly we're UMass, at least within the state itself. I think that almost anybody, whether UMass is there, was a place they really want to go, or it's a safety school, no offense to UMass, you're going to have a lot of, you know, in-state and New England and national people who are going to keep coming and looking at the school regardless, and many of them will continue to enroll.
Moving along, it feels like we've been talking about this forever and ever, but believe it or not, by this time next year, the MGM Casino is scheduled to be open for business. Matt, what do you think about the progress of the project so far?
Well, I mean, construction-wise, it's been going fairly well. It's a little still hard to imagine how a year from now it's going to be all finished because it does look pretty naked from the outside. But then again, you know, there's lots of projects can look that way. What I'll be interested in seeing is when we start getting announcements of retailers and restaurants inside the establishment. I have heard less than optimistic things. I won't go into a lot of detail about that. But, you know, it's still plenty of time for those things to be announced and built out. But those are the announcements I'm going to be looking for because that's going to show the interest and the credibility that the project has with third parties.
That's really interesting because I'm kind of looking at how MGM is going to go out. MGM came to town saying that they were going to do they're not going to have a venue space. They're going to be using Springfield and sending people out. So I'm going to be curious how far the power of MGM radiates and helps Springfield.
Is this something that you're looking forward to opening? Something you're dreading? Or are you kind of somewhere in the middle on it?
Oh, man, this one's hard. So I want to be hopeful because I feel like this is a very hopeful thing. And a lot of people feel like this could be really good for Springfield. But it's a casino. They don't have a good track record of being longtime business and economic driving forces. So I don't know. I'll be doom and gloom. I'm a little nervous.
Well, that kind of dovetails into my next question. I'm just going to ask you two to look into your crystal balls. And is this going to be a success? Is it going to be a flop? Or is it going to be somewhere in the middle, Matt?
In full disclosure, I and my blog have opined against casinos at every step of the way. I do think MGM was the better project than the other one that was being considered in Springfield. That said, I don't think it's going to be as good as its proponents say. I don't think it's going to be devastating to the area, to the city, but the city already has a fair amount of white elephants. And so it's a question, is this going to be another one or is it going to stand out in a better way?
Kristen?
I'm saying, you know, it's going to be nice for a couple years. It's going to get a big splash. It'll be new. It's going to be up before some of the other casinos that are coming to the area will be. But, you know, then it's going to fade. I'm going to say 10 years. I'm not sure where we're going to be. I'm not sure if it's still going to be positive.
Matt, we turn to something you've been writing about, and it's the death of a community activist in Chicopee, Jafet Robles. Appears to have been a murder. Tell us about his impact on Springfield politics and activism.
Well, Jafet started his activity in the North End. He had gotten out of he'd served some time in prison, which he was very open about. And he wanted to try to use his experience to try to keep as few people from getting into that same situation, you know, opposing the schools-to-prison pipeline, social justice issues in the North End. But he was very effective as an organizer, but he was also very effective at crossing a bunch of other progressive issues. Like, he truly wanted to build coalitions. And, you know, I haven't looked at the data to see how much, you know, the raw turnout changed as a result of his organizing, but it definitely changed the equation as to who you went to as who was in power, who was a party elder, if you will, in the North End. He became one of those people, which was totally different from the traditional or establishment Latinos, as many people have called the powers that be in the North End.
Matt Szafranski of Western Mass Politics and Insight and Kristen Palapini of the Valley Advocate, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And thank you to our loyal listeners of the shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. Remember, you can catch us anywhere you get your podcasts at any time or at nepr.net/podcasts. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.